Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com. Free Talk Live.
Welcome to Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, the creator of the Liberty Conspiracy, which you can watch every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. live on Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter X feed at Gard Goldsmith. You can also check us out anytime after the fact, of course, because the recordings will be at Rumble and Rockfin. And please feel free to visit my Substack, where every Sunday you'll find the Sunday News Assembly, 20 stories plus. And you'll also find video segments as well, all of it pertaining to liberty, allowing us to derive long-standing lessons from some of the breaking news stories. And, of course, you can find my work at mrctv.org, the Media Research Center's TV arm. And I want to thank you very much for tuning in to this night of Free Talk Live, combining with Liberty Conspiracy. We open the program with an analysis of the oral arguments in the Murthy v. Missouri Supreme Court case about government censorship through social media giants. It's a massive story and perhaps one of the most consequential stories for free speech that has popped up in the United States in the past 100 years. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. What's on tap, one and all? Well, of course, we're going to the courts, everybody, so we need to hear from our pals in black and white land. Perry, where are you?
Sitting there like, free speech? No way. Get out of here.
All right. Let's get rolling, everybody. Okay. So we're going to start things off, of course, with quick coverage on what's going on in the Supreme Court. And there was another very big case today, the National Rifle Association of America versus Volo. But we're not going to go into that one today because the dominant one, and I just focus my attention on this case, the Murthy versus Missouri case. This was the big one that has been brewing for more than 2 years now. It's huge, and I've been writing a lot about it. And even prior to it, I could sort of see it coming. That's why for MRC TV, I did a lot of concentration on Section 230, and even here on the show, I talked a lot about Section 230 of the 1996 Telecommunications Act because it is pertinent. And I knew it was going to be pertinent. And sure enough, it was pretty much the core underlying monster behind it all, hiding behind the fog, was the regulatory power that the federal government claims over anybody who is involved with the internet or broadcasting, over radiated waves, or telecommunications over the phone lines. Section 230, 1996 Telecommunications Act, ISPs and stuff like that. So let's show you a quick one from Elena Erskine as this came up in the morning, 9:56 a.m. And you might have seen it at 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The justices will hear oral arguments in Murthy versus Missouri and the National Rifle Association of America v. Volo. Okay. Now, over at the SCOTUS blog, if you visit the SCOTUS blog a lot, and who doesn't? Who doesn't, huh? Yeah, I'm saying, you know, when you're going on a day like, hey, baby, you want to check out my SCOTUS blog? Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Come on over here. Yeah, we'll scroll through it and have a great time. Yeah, anyway, maybe there are some people. That would be awesome if I could find a young lady who was interested in some of this stuff, too. And I do know a couple, which is kind of nice. Very good people. So anyway, not that you're going to start a relationship, but it's good to know some people are interested in this stuff. So Elena Erskine wrote that, and I want to go over to at least one of the pop publications that covered this. We'll go to Politico. On their list over at SCOTUS blog, this will show you, they had like NPR, NBC, CNBC, you know, CNN, and Politico. Oh, gee, I wonder if I might get pretty much the same message from them all. I don't know. How strange. Anyway, here it is. The echo chamber erupts. Supreme Court to hear online speech case with major 2024 implications. The case involves claims that the Biden administration censored conservative speech, and any ruling could impact all government dealings with digital platforms on the fall elections. Okay, first of all, I got to mention that it's not just claims that the Biden administration censored conservative speech. This is proven. This is proven, documented. I was writing about it before the Twitter files came out. The Twitter files came out. They were censoring political speech and engaging in their own propaganda and paying people without the public knowing. That's what they were doing. This is not claims. This is verified by internal documents and even statements of the politicians and even people inside in their own notes involved with the so-called COVID pandemic response. Right? They were engaged in this stuff very clearly. So anyway, that's what is at stake. A lot of people were involved in this. RFK Jr. was involved in this. The cases were combined for a while, then they renamed it. It's been quite a ride here. Also, the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, as I mentioned to you about maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, Dr. Peter McCullough mentioned that they have gotten involved. They're sort of the free market alternative to the American Medical Association. And I think my first nationally published article was actually published by them. It's essentially a journal, so I didn't really categorize it in my head as like being published by a magazine. The first magazine was The Free Man from Foundation for Economic Education. So, okay, if you want some background on this, let's go over here to a 2022 piece that I wrote for MRC TV. Civil rights defenders sue, claiming Biden administration pushed big tech censorship. So I've been covering this a lot. I feel like I'm okay to be a go-to person tonight on this and sort of break this apart. Now, monitor the statements. Got some stuff to play for you, and it's a lot of stuff. The show's going to be different tonight because we're going to be playing these statements and breaking these things down, not just pertaining to the actual case itself and whether or not the things we're hearing from the government or the claims from the plaintiffs are verified or whether or not they're shadings of things, but the statements of some of the justices, like I said, very key, because Ketanji Brown Jackson not only was involved with asking questions that reveal her biases, but she actually was projecting, she was radiating a message while she was there, because I think she knew the media was going to pick it up. Wait till you hear this. I mean, she was continuing to push the Biden, the Trumper, deep state members and deep staters for ages line, the pop media line, that censorship is somehow allowable and valid based on the, of course, consequentialist idea that a single person's speech can be completely destroyed and it won't put anybody else's speech at risk and it will somehow benefit everyone based on the political entity in power and what they think is benefit. It's incredible. So here it is. I'm going to play you this video that came out March of 2022, almost 2 years ago to the date. And you can let me know what you think about this. It should be all queued up. Here we go. The anti-rights, anti-speech combo of big government and their ideologically allied, morally empty big tech accommodators has been spreading the viral violence of politicized anti-science lockdowns and censorship for years. But now, has the Biden administration finally gone too far in actually calling for Twitter and social media to silence us? A new lawsuit says yes. Hi, everyone. I'm Gardner Goldsmith for MRC TV. You know, since the start of the government will define science and big tech will follow mania surrounding COVID-19 and the insane political attacks on our rights, many MRC TV friends
might have asked themselves how the government media nexus could repeatedly revise their claimed reality and simultaneously claim that those of us who have been right from the start were still wrong. Others might have realized that the matter of consistency wasn't the key, that it was all about power. Or, as Lewis Carroll said about propagandistic politicians and truth in Alice in Wonderland, quote, "The question is, which is to be master? That is all." Now, there's a new battle on that front of speech, a battle that follows up on a report about government-defined so-called truth and big tech that I got to write for MRCTV on March 8th. On March 24th, a civil rights group representing three people silenced by Twitter announced that they're suing the Biden administration for pushing that censorship. The suit, brought by the New Civil Liberties Alliance, NCLA, on behalf of Michael P. Singer, Mark Shingizi, and Daniel Cogson, accuses Surgeon General Vivek Murthy and Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra of pressuring Twitter to silence the accounts of each plaintiff after they posted information that diverged from one of the many changing versions of so-called government science. As Greg Piper reports for Just the News, quote, "The government's sustained pressure on social media platforms to censor and report purported COVID-19 misinformation amounts to state action that violates the First Amendment, according to a lawsuit filed Friday on behalf of three Twitter users." And there are two major Bidenista periods of action on which the NCLA focuses. The first is the one on which I reported on March 8th. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy's fascist call on social media and tech carrying instant messaging to cite the total number of what they called misinformation posts that they carried on their platforms. Quote, "Twitter suspended Cogson temporarily and Singer permanently within a week of Surgeon General Vivek Murthy's March 3rd request for information, RFI, on the impact and prevalence of health misinformation in the digital information environment during the COVID-19 pandemic, including how it affects likelihood to vaccinate," end quote. That move was easy to understand as not only an attempt to intimidate tech platforms into shutting down dissent, but also as a targeting device to prompt individuals to self-censor. After all, despite Murthy claiming that the instances in which people posted misinformation would be aggregated and thus anonymized, in order to confirm that the statistics were real, the government would have to have confirmation of the identities of each person who released the so-called errant post. Piper continues offering key information about the fight against the Surgeon General. Quote, "Murthy is exceeding the statutory power of his office, which lets him quarantine individuals reasonably believed to be infected and communicable to prevent interstate transmission," NCLA claims. It's the same legal basis the Supreme Court ruled ineligible for the CDC's COVID eviction moratorium, end quote. And of course, the deeper issue of whether the CDC is either constitutional, good luck finding it in the Constitution, or is an ethical construct at all, because of course you're being forced to pay for a gang of bureaucrats, and I don't see that as exactly ethical. Well, that wasn't addressed by the Supreme Court. But the majority did rule that the CDC has no statutory power to ban evictions and, of course, become the de jure landlord of post-rights respecting America. But this is a valuable contribution to the fight for citizens to claw back some of their remaining rights about speech. The fact that people such as plaintiff Daniel Cogson were deplatformed for posting information with which the feds themselves actually agreed merely adds fuel to the free speech fire. as lawyer Jenin Yonis tweeted March 8th, quote, Daniel Kotsen has been suspended for the tweet below, a view shared by most epidemiologists, Rochelle Walensky, the vaccines don't stop transmission, and Anthony Fauci. Everyone will get COVID. I'll just leave that there. And she included a screenshot of Twitter shutting down a post from Kotsen in which he had said, quote, it is important to never lose sight of the fact that the global pandemic is ending not because of the vaccines, wink, wink, but because almost everyone got infected with COVID, end quote. And that's just the latest wrinkle in the nasty face of this sneering, leering, big brother treatment of free speech. The other aspect of the suit goes back to spring and summer of last year. And even further when looking at the deep roots of government claims to control the internet, as Piper points out, quote, the suit says the unconstitutional state action started with statements by the White House in May and HHS in July. Press Secretary Jen Psaki implied President Biden would take antitrust actions against tech platforms if they didn't censor vaccine misinformation, while Murthy issued an advisory on building a healthy information environment. The phrasing resembles that used by Chinese state media, end quote. Not a surprise. Perhaps they caught a censorship flu from China. That, of course, was funded by U.S. tax money. Continuing, quote, tech platforms will be held accountable for people who reject COVID vaccines and masking and use unproven treatments, Murthy said. They must increase monitoring of purported misinformation, crack down on super spreaders and repeat offenders, and amplify information from trusted and credible sources and subject matter experts. As the lawsuit notes, quote, they again directed much of their ire towards social media platforms, which they largely blamed for the problem of ostensible misinformation, ordering social media companies like Twitter to remove certain posts and ban certain users. Statements made by Murthy, Psaki, and President Biden made clear that these were not requests, but demands, and that the administration was contemplating penalties against social media platforms for allowing misinformation to be disseminated on them, end quote. These Biden underling threats encompass an overall mentality that is enshrined in Section 230, which shields online hosts from being called publishers and being targets of state-level action concerning things like posts that might contain child pornography or threats or depictions of violence. The section also shields the tech hosts from civil liability against slander or libel suits from something that might have been posted on their platforms. The key is that the section does allow hosts to eliminate posts and still be called platforms rather than publishers, as long as the hosts do so in good faith. That's in quotes. Good faith, of course, is determined by the FCC. If the FCC doesn't think you operated in good faith, they can go after you, and so can state governments, as well as individuals who might have been harmed by, yeah, a slanderous post. So these threats of further action by Biden officials easily can be viewed as warnings implying changes in how the feds view the good faith clause of Section 230 and whether they think the hosts are operating that way. Mm-hmm. It's a threat that can inspire censorship on the part of the hosts, like Twitter. Deeper still, we need to look at the question of the FCC itself, because that's the omnipresent, always existing threat against anybody who does anything online. We have to look at the questionable constitutional foundation of the FCC in the first place, which began as the Federal Radio Commission in the 1920s, under the suspicious claim that radio waves cross state borders and that there's a limited spectrum of slots for broadcasters. But as James Madison said, the Interstate Commerce Clause of the Constitution, found in Section 1, Article 8 of the Constitution, was not written to grant the feds power to control things that went over state borders. It was written to allow Congress to mediate state versus state trade disputes. To say that Congress can create an agency to regulate radio because content crosses borders in multiple states, well, that's akin to saying Congress can create a federal book commission because booksellers sell in multiple states. And to claim that the radio spectrum is limited, therefore the feds must claim ownership and then license people to use the bands, well, that's akin to saying that there's only a limited number of usable trees on the planet at any given time, and that therefore paper is limited and newspapers and books have to be controlled by the government. This lawsuit is very timely, and I believe it reveals a lot, shedding light on the fascistic tactics of the Bidenistas and on the U.S. government going back to the creation of the Federal Radio Commission. Fascism often gets overlooked. It's been around for over a century, and I thought it would be important to share the information with you, stemming from this current story going all the way back to the 1920s. Thanks so much for watching, everybody. Remember, if you're watching on YouTube, we'll see you there in the comments section, but we've been getting great response also on Rumble. Absolutely fantastic to see all the people heading to Rumble.
Absolutely. And yes, I'm very appreciative of everybody who joins and follows Liberty Conspiracy on Rumble. We have a Liberty Conspiracy channel on YouTube, but I don't go live there because I play musical cuts. I would probably get hit with a copyright strike. And whether I get hit or don't get hit by YouTube might even depend on whether they like the other content that I put out there. If they were in favor of my collectivist side, if I were to put that out there somehow, if I had one, I don't have a collectivist side. But if I were to promote collectivism, they probably wouldn't give me a copyright strike unless they really got pushed by some of the recording companies. But otherwise, they would use it as an excuse, as a justification to tear me down. So, with that stated, everybody, let's go back over into what is on tap tonight and go into this major story in just a minute. Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency made for spending. You can pay your bills with Dash at Spritz.finance. Plus, they can send dollars to your bank if you still need those for something. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at Dash.org. That's Dash.org.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
USA News Update. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced the U.S. has presented a draft resolution to the United Nations urging an immediate ceasefire in Gaza linked to the release of hostages held by Hamas. Blinken made the statement during his meetings with leaders in the Middle East. Following his discussion in Egypt, he's scheduled to travel to Israel. New York's Attorney General gearing up to seize some of Donald Trump's properties. USA's Laura Winters.
Donald Trump's golf course and a large estate he owns in Westchester County could be seized by New York Attorney General Letitia James. She's filed the preliminary paperwork in case Trump can't post the $500 million bond he needs in order to appeal his civil fraud judgment.
Immigration riots have been unfolding in El Paso, Texas. Reports indicated that the Texas National Guard faced a significant challenge as waves of illegal immigrants attempted to breach border barriers Thursday. I'm Ryan Daniels, USA News.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Advertising is simple. It starts with someone who has a need.
Mom!
And then gets more specific.
Mom, I want pizza.
Then we add urgency.
I want pizza tonight.
Before you know it, your GCN advertising message is reaching millions of listeners. Listeners who are definitely in need.
We want pizza!
You see, advertising on GCN is simple. Your message meets their need, and the result means new business for you. Tell us about your business, then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message to feed those who have an urgent need.
We want pizza tonight!
GCN has the most affordable national radio advertising rates, period. And millions of people listen to GCN radio programs on over 1,000 AM and FM and XM stations and streaming audio live. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email, advertise@gcnlive.com.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live.
We return with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find Liberty Conspiracy every Monday through Friday at Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter /X feed at Guard Goldsmith. And, of course, I invite you anytime to subscribe free over at my Substack. And remember, every Sunday you'll find at least 20 news stories plus video links pertaining to freedom, and I get to add contextual information that hopefully will help break apart those news stories and let us derive intellectual ammunition to take with us for future situations that are similar. Let's continue with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. So let's go into the oral arguments in the cases. The background. We've got the background. Okay. Now let's go into the oral arguments and watch Kagan, and especially watch Ketanji Brown Jackson. Now, there's some positives here. I thought Sam Alito was very good. This isn't like a movie review or some sort of sports review. Like, he was at the top of this form, dude. I'm so glad I put him on my fantasy baseball team. But let me give you a little heads up here. If you get the opportunity, you can head over to C-SPAN, because C-SPAN has their coverage. And it's about an hour and 43 minutes of the majority of the oral arguments from that day. They might have missed something after lunchtime. I'm not exactly sure. But it was very interesting checking that out. And I want to go through this now with you from the start with the Biden administration's arguments coming out and the questions that came from a number of the justices. And as we go through this, keep in mind there are a number of terms such as moderation, and that is equivalent to basically curation, which is the term that you'll find in the 1996 Telecommunications Act for Section 230. Also, keep in mind as you listen to this The arguments that have come up about Marsh v. Alabama, the 1946 Supreme Court ruling. Now, they don't go into it here, but just remember that the practical outcome of taking something that is private property that the owner opens to a large number of people under the owner's decision of what is acceptable or what is not acceptable, if one supports the idea that that must be open to everyone, that person also supports the idea that the government is deciding that. Right? That's generally what we're talking about. We're talking about Supreme Court decision, one who favors the Marsh v. Alabama decision. Typically, we see that folks who favor that say, if you're going to be open to people coming in, and Marsh v. Alabama was about this shipbuilding company in Alabama, and they had a campus for their employees with little cabins and a post office and a little store and stuff, and a woman was promulgating some of her religious material. They asked her to leave. She wouldn't leave. They called the police. They cited her for trespass, and she went to the Supreme Court on it. The Supreme Court magically just invented out of nowhere the idea that, well, if you open it up to a large number of people, it's public property. Which clearly destroys the difference between what is public property, tax-funded, and what is private. What incorporates the tragedy of the commons, because it forces everybody to pay for it at different levels and so on and so forth, but everybody thinks they've got a claim on it, and the ratios are never equaled out in any way, because, of course, people would say that that just favors the rich, of course, who will get taxed more anyway. But that is public property. Private property is that which is owned by individuals or groups of individuals who get together. Now, I'm pulling away the idea of asking for corporate status, the incorporation stuff that the government grants people. But just this general moral question of what is private and what is public, there's a stark difference. And private property must be hands-off from the state. But the Marsh v. Alabama decision changed that. And all of a sudden destroyed all the barriers against private property. If there had been walls there, they pulled them down. And that led to the Americans with Disabilities Act. That led to the 64 Civil Rights Act, the public accommodations portion of it. That led to Title IX. That led to the ADA under George H.W. Bush, the Americans with Disabilities Act, where literally there were restaurants that actually went out of business because they couldn't do the ramps right and had to keep spending money on it. They were going to put wheelchair ramps in for strippers at strip clubs. I mean, just absurd stuff. But again, those absurdities are just the outward face of the inner rot of the Marsh v. Alabama decision in all of its manifestations. And it destroys private property. It destroys the concept of free association and free will. Key things that Walter Williams used to discuss all throughout his career. Thomas Sowell talks about these things. And so it's important to keep this in mind, because this is exactly what happens. What we see right now, this debate, if it is found, if someone agrees that an online platform is like that shipbuilding campus, it's a public place, even though it should be run privately, even though I know the people at YouTube said that they are the public sphere, they're the public commons, even if they say that, it doesn't mean that. It just says that they're saying that. And it doesn't mean you can apply that concept to other people who don't agree with that, right? If they want to be open to everybody, they can be open to everybody, while somebody else who's very, very big also can put up barriers to say no. Like I said, if Elon Musk wants to run a chat platform or a posting platform that's only for Christians or only for Satanists or Baphometists or whatever, he could do so, right? And they can have restrictive language on those things. Just like if I open up my home to a party and I say, okay, I want everybody to wear orange clothes to the party. It's an orange party, right? It's the Scots-Irish, right? So that's my stipulation. If you're not wearing it, get out. This is my place, not your place. So all those things are impositions that invade the concept of private property. They destroy the good balance between neighbors and neighborly interactions that people have. And they claim for the government the power to control things. They destroy private property. Right? Okay. So essentially you have communism, you have socialism hiding behind the 64 Civil Rights Act and the public accommodations portion of it. You have all sorts of logical questions that arise, as I've often mentioned. If you're in a 99.9% racist-free town, but there's one person in there who's a skinhead Nazi, and he doesn't like Jews or doesn't like, you know, black people or whatever, right? Does that mean that you then, as a customer with your property, must share the opportunity and frequent his place, or that you have to let him into your shop, that you have to do business with him? What if you don't want to, right? It's just like the government forcing you to pay taxes that are going to go to slaughter dozens of Palestinians in Gaza. You can't stop them. They'll kill you eventually if you resist hard enough. You don't want to go to jail for not paying your taxes? Well, they'll send armed people to come get you. You resist the armed people? Well, they're, of course, going to call you the aggressor and kill you, right? That's what they do. It's the whole concept of the state is a massive gaslighting thing. That's all it is. If you resist and ask to be left alone, you're the bad guy. You're the wrongdoer. You're the aggressor. It's amazing. So this is very important to keep in mind that Marsh v. Alabama decision from 1946, if people agree that private property that caters to a lot of people must be opened to everybody, well, what they're actually agreeing is it's going to be policed by some political entity, and that throws the power not towards your preference that it's going to be open to everybody, but it just depends on whom the government. You're not going to be able to stop them if they start to restrict things, if they don't make it everybody. You're not going to be able to stop them. It will always trend towards the government favoring certain people. That's the way it's going to work. For the public good, as they say. Right? Because some people must be culled. They're dangerous, as we saw with the COVID stuff. The very modus operandi, the very crimes that were perpetrated against people like you and me stem from the mindset that accepts the Marsh v. Alabama concept. It must be questioned. Any ethical person must resist it. Because the state getting involved and so-called opening the doors to everybody means the state controls the doors. And they can shut them for their purposes. And this is exactly what we saw with the government getting involved. And what's interesting in this is when you hear this first oral argument, you're going to hear the government's defense here, right? The government doesn't get into some of the details on those very obvious statements of Joe Biden saying that he's going to use antitrust and things like that, right? They don't even get into that. They're just arguing that somehow, get this, and you're going to hear one of the justices talk about it, there was a compelling state interest to silence people. Public health, silence the individual. We're making it up, whatever the compelling state interest is. So, with that preface, let's get into it. We're going to roll with this, and I'm going to pause it occasionally for my commentary, your commentary, Rockfin X, and of course, the mighty Rumble team. And again, thank you. I know Fregan is over in Rumble. I didn't see if Fregan's also in Rockfin too, but thanks again, Fregan. I really appreciate it. And Risha is there. So let's go with this, everybody. Here we are. They've got the lineup. It's like a baseball team. It's kind of sad. I don't know. Who's the shortstop? I don't know. Who's on first? I don't know. No, I don't know who's on second. No, I don't know who's on third. Okay, so here we go. This is the opening coming from the Biden administration making their oral argument. Here we go.
Under argument first this morning in case 23411, Murphy versus Missouri. Mr. Fletcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court.
All right, so if you're just listening, folks, that was John Roberts, Chief Justice John Roberts. I won't do that all the time because he pretty much, Brian Fletcher, just goes back and forth with different people. But I will mention the person, if you're just listening in audio streaming or after the fact on our podcast, Brian Fletcher. He's the U.S. Principal Deputy Solicitor General. And you get to pay his salary to get him to work to silence you. Let's go. You get to pay everybody's salary. That's awesome. Yes, the overlords. Isn't it a strange commentary on the so-called land of the free that nine people can decide after they hear the arguments of an also government-paid lawyer and people who had to shell out their own money to try to fight this stuff? They'll decide about your free speech rights. Isn't that great? Land o' the free. It's like Land O' Lakes. They remove the Indian and still call it the same product.
May not use coercive threats to suppress speech, but it is entitled to speak for itself by informing, persuading, or criticizing private speakers.
Okay, so I'm just going to go back there for you, okay? So he's saying that they're not entitled to silence people, but they are entitled to speak for themselves. So that goes towards the attempt to have an injunction to block the Biden administration to stop them from silencing people, working with social media. In other words, what they call working with threatening, having behind the everything, the fist behind the back saying, I'm going to punch you if you don't work with us. Section 230, we're going to remove some of the protections, antitrust suits. We're going to lose the, all those things, right? Those are what are hiding behind the curtain. And it takes a while, but you're going to hear a couple of the conservative judges saying, hey, with this hiding back here, isn't this basically an implicit threat? Yeah, it is. It is. And you're also going to hear the Solicitor General talking about how the online services like Facebook and so on, they volunteered. They wanted to make sure they were putting good information out there. Well, why do you think they promoted the idea that they were only going to make sure that there was good information out there? Because they had already heard the threats from the government. That's why. Let's continue. Here we go. Amazing. Just amazing. Because they were trying to conform with what the government people would say was good. That's, we all know this. If you got censored, you know what was driving the whole thing. And of course, some of it was ideological. They also were pushing the idea of collectivism, lockdowns as being, you must conform. But a lot of it on the business side was, we don't want to deal with the FCC. We don't want to deal with getting Section 230 and massive lawsuits. So here we go.
We'll hear argument first this morning in case 23411, Murphy versus Missouri. Mr. Fletcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. The government may not use coercive threats to suppress speech, but it is entitled to speak for itself by informing, persuading, or criticizing private speakers.
Okay, so let's just stop right there and just say, what is the FCC but an omnipresent, always extant coercive threat? Period. He just stated the argument against the very existence of the FCC. But we'll continue because, of course, people overlook that because it's already assumed that the FCC can exist. It's existed as the FRC since 1920, as you saw in the preview video.
Like Bantam Books, this case should be about that fundamental distinction between persuasion and coercion.
All right, so he says, like Bantam Books. That's key. We'll go into the Bantam Books thing very, very quickly. What is the Bantam Books decision? Okay, the Bantam Books decision is from 1963. It's Bantam Books Incorporated v. Sullivan. And this is the story from First Amendment MTSU.edu. Okay? In Bantam Books Incorporated v. Sullivan, the Supreme Court ruled that states must provide adequate, according to the federal government's rules, adequate procedural safeguards when establishing a mechanism to declare books obscene. Okay, now, again, based on the First Amendment, it is Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. States can, but you have to check their constitution. This is one of the reasons why I try to stress this federalist concept, the original concept of federalism, not under the Hamiltonian idea of federalism, the confederated idea that the states are not listed in the First Amendment. Congress is listed in the First Amendment. But, of course, they pay no attention to that anymore. The court's decision favored a group of book publishers who were suing a state commission created to take preventative action to stop juvenile delinquency. Part of the commission's responsibility was, quote, to educate the public concerning any book or other thing containing obscene, indecent, or impure language that could corrupt youth. So what we're discussing here, folks, is the prerogative or power of a state to put out information versus the power of the state to silence individual information. Now, the prerogative of the state to put out information is also a very big part of this case in Murthy, right? because it opens up a can of worms and you get into an almost infinite regress of wondering, okay, if the state is forcing me to pay for the state, this is a basic philosophical question. We often would discuss this in class. If the state is forcing me to pay for the state, they're taking away part of my ability to be able to publish my own speech, take time off to speak and things like that, right? Publish my own speech and things like that, right? To fund what I think might be important, that sort of thing. Okay. They are then translating that money into their own speech, right? And that speech always, by definition, because it comes from the polis, is by definition political. It's an irrefutable fact. It's just logic, right? Now, some people can say it has more of an immediate political impact on a particular issue, but it always is funded and pushed by political means. Now, it can have an agenda beyond the mere existence of the state. It can have an agenda pushing something like, oh, I don't know, calling people who are critical of the state of Israel policies, calling them anti-Semitic, or putting out information about jabs that's fake, or doing something about, oh, Russian propaganda that also is fake, right? Whatever it is, right? You can just check into what the NSA and CIA have been doing for 70 years, right? So, with that stated, you can actually get down to an infinite regress where somebody who operates for the state says, well, look, if you're saying that the state, especially the federal government, is impinging on your right to free speech by taking your money, then what you're actually saying is that the state can say nothing. So they're drawing a distinction here between the state engaging in what is recognizably overt, on hand, prima facie, in the moment, political speech to push out a particular agenda, like get the jab, you know, this is coming from the Ad Council, or, you know, fight for the army, be all you can be, or whatever, right? Those types of things, to put that information out to promote the government, and even to the point of just issuing reports. Their argument essentially here is, if the state, they're saying the state was only engaged in promoting the good things that the state promotes, just like issuing a paper about how many people are in the military, or the fact that there's going to be an Easter egg roll at the White House. We have to have some way to get this information out. And if you are going to prevent us from putting out our message on Facebook about how wonderful the jabs are, well, that would make all the other functions of the government impossible to do, too. How could the president even print up an executive order on a piece of paper? So what they're doing is they're trying to really blur the what most people would see as the basic functions of government in a limited sense of issuing simple reports about what it's doing and how the government mixes in propaganda, of course, to fight the COVID so-called pandemic. Got to get that information out on Facebook. How can you put an injunction against the CDC putting out all this information? And then they mix in, don't you dare listen to those other people over there who are telling you lies. You might have heard this, but so it becomes propaganda. It always becomes that. Because if there's a different opinion out there, they're going to be attracted to trying to fight that different opinion because it questions the validity of what they're saying, right? So there's always going to be a tendency to make the government message a fist against whatever the message is that opposes it. So this is where in the oral arguments here, this is where they're trying to draw some sort of distinction between a state offering information about what is seen as offensive and actually shutting something down. But if you look at it logically and you draw out all the logic, they're already, by taking your money, shutting down your opportunities. They're increasing your opportunity costs to try to do what you wanted to do before, whether it's publishing something that you might think they might think is pornographic or you don't think is pornographic, right? Because to them, we COVID denialists, we jab denialists, well, we were akin to, you know, terrible porn, right? We were putting people's lives at risk. It was the same emergency mindset. So by taking our, by taking this case from all these years ago, from 1963, we can see this mindset, this blurring of, well, the government of this state was merely engaging in trying to put forward the definitions of pornography, while Bantam Books found that offensive. So there has to be some fine line between shutting down a publishing company and offering a different opinion. But that different opinion is coming from the government. It's propaganda. It's always propaganda. Everything the government does is propaganda. It always is. Even when it's telling you that the White House opens at 9 a.m., that's propaganda. They're propagating a government line. Now, it might be seen as pretty much neutral, but it's not neutral to the taxpayer who might say, you know, I'd rather spend my money on getting a cup of coffee than funding you guys to tell me what time you open, right? So this is very key. Again, I'm going to repeat this Bantam Books thing and go back to the opening argument that they offer, because this is very, very important here, okay? So this distinction here is quite interesting. They say part of the commission's responsibility in this state of New York was to, quote, educate the public concerning any book or other thing containing obscene, indecent, or impure language. So are they just informing? Are they targeting? Right? The Commission of New York carried out this responsibility by threatening the distributors of material deemed to be objectionable with prosecution in an attempt to suppress obscene material. In its fact-finding capacity, the trial court found the Commission's attempted suppression to have been successful, and of course, you can't do that. The federal government, under their argument, does not want to be seen as falling under the Bantam Book standard, because that clearly showed that the state was involved in trying to shut somebody down. But they didn't go into the deeper question. There's a lot more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live coming up.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. GCNfood.com.